New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos. You can now download a free PDF copy or purchase a beautiful printed edition of Issue 5 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. This is the fourth interview in the series on neurodiversity. Once again, I'm with Annika and Tristan. Today, we're going to be exploring the metaphysical and cosmological implications of their experience. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's an honor. Thank you, Jeffrey.
It's a pleasure to be with each of you. And to begin with, Tristan.
Okay.
Had an interest, as we talked about, in Star Trek.
Yes.
From childhood, I assume.
Yes, from childhood, yeah.
I mean, I know I was watching Star Trek from before you were born.
Yeah, I can imagine.
it's been around a long time, and Star Trek indeed deals with all sorts of science fiction scenarios that involve metaphysics and cosmological implications. Even though you became an atheist, you still, I'm sure, had to ponder some of these questions as a young person.
Yeah, my family were kind of Trekkies, so I was brought into it in a young age. And I loved it. It was a show about a utopian future where humanity had overcome its hurdles, its challenges. And, I loved it. I loved it. It showed me not only hope, but it showed me how to conduct myself, how to be a good human being, be a good person, and how to navigate the moral and ethical challenges that we face as humanity. So it was very important to my growth as a human being.
Well, you know, it's interesting now that I think about it. Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, was actually involved in a circle created by Dr. Andrea Puharich, a parapsychologist who I knew when he was alive. He died many years ago, but he worked with different channelers who channeled a series of entities. They called themselves the Nine, and they were related to the cosmology from ancient Egypt, the nine major deities in ancient Egyptian culture. Puharich thought he was in touch with these people and that they were also connected to UFOs. And Gene Roddenberry was part of that circle.
That's amazing.
That Puharich brought together back in Maine. He had a foundation up in Maine at the moment. I forget what it was called. My mentor, Arthur M. Young, who I lived with for a while I was a college student, was also part of that circle. So I'm under the impression that Roddenberry, you know, when he went out to create Star Trek, he was somewhat inspired by that experience.
That does not surprise me at all. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. And yeah.
At some point, I suppose, after Annika made her presence felt and known to you, you gave up your atheistic views. You realized life is larger than that.
Yeah, I learned that reality is larger than that. That I really had no idea that I was really, as an atheist or materialist, it was almost like I was focusing on the little grains of sand on the beach and not seeing the larger picture or not seeing the dynamic life that is reality. It was so eye-opening, and especially dealing with coming in and out of a body and realizing that I'm not just the meat. I'm not just, you know, I'm not just my body. It was a complete shock. It shook me to my core, and I went through series of ontological shock after ontological shock. And then of course that kind of opened up this doorway into spirituality and the actual nature of reality, and then UFOs and beings, and it just kind of exploded. It was just this incredible journey over the last 4 years that I would not have believed. I would have looked down on just maybe, you know, 10 years ago from my perspective, you know, 5 years ago, but, you know, from my, you know, 10 years ago, it would have been completely unheard of for me to even consider these things.
Well, now let's, since you mentioned 5 years ago, 10 years
right.
ago, let's talk about that, because the body is 37 years old, but you consider yourself to be about
33, 34, yeah.
Because of the five years
gap. So sometimes things, when I think back and I go, oh yeah, you know, like a couple years ago, I'm thinking 2016, but that was much longer ago. You know, that was almost 10 years ago. We're getting there. And meanwhile, to me, I'm thinking, oh, it was, you know, 5 years ago, because it was chronologically went from 2016 to 2021, and I'm missing that gap.
You know, I just did an interview on universal consciousness with a biologist from Emory University, Alexander Escobar, and he pointed out that if you're a photon, which he equates with universal consciousness and mm-hmm. pure spirit, the photon exists really outside of time and space, according to Einstein's theory of relativity.
Yes, it does.
There's no time or space when you're a photon. You can travel from one end of the universe to the other. To an outside observer, it might take 13.8 billion years. But to the photon, it happens instantly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of my favorite facts. To a photon, it happens instantly, which kind of speaks to the nature of time itself. I mean, from that perspective, it's everything is kind of happening all at once. The entire universe is happening all at once. And I know Annika especially loves the topic of universal consciousness.
Yes, I do. I love it.
So for you, Tristan, what happened in those 5 years is it passed instantly. For Annika, it took 5 years.
Yeah, it was instant for me.
It was five long years. And I even suspected that it could have even been, because to me, because I had so few memories, like I noticed that other people had different perspectives of time, where for me, it seemed to last so long. Like even a week was a long time. And that changed as I've gotten older. So early on, it felt like, oh my gosh, everything was so slow and it took forever. And every week was like, it felt so long. And I have that perspective now, but yeah, it was five long, hard years.
And for me, it was just boom, done.
So it might suggest that you were in a realm of pure spirit where time doesn't exist.
Yeah, I've had a lot of thought into it. I mean, we're kind of aware that there's sort of a veil of unawareness, or that there's something going on with that. And I feel as though I passed beyond it. I don't know what happened to me beyond it. I don't know if I did things or if I went places. I have no idea. But, you know, then I came back and I couldn't carry that with me, I guess, if I did have experiences. And then all of a sudden I was back on Earth, and it was 5 years later, and it was just jumping through time like quantum leap.
I would call it a cosmological milestone in your life.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Uh-huh. Definitely.
And when you came back, I gather you and Annika were interested in finding some social support for, first of all, at least from Annika's point of view, or your point of view too.
Yeah.
You're a trans woman.
Yeah. I mean, I had before I had the trans community, which was really nice, and they were, you know, super supportive. And I even tried to help trans girls transition as someone who had kind of gone through the process. And, but then after Tristan came back, I was like, well, I would really like to find a support community. And at first we tried the DID community, but they're kind of going through what the beginnings of the trans community went through, where there's sort of like a gatekeeping sort of element to it. And the early trans community, and I say early from my perspective, but like it struggled with people saying, oh, you're only trans if this, you're only trans if that, you have to, and the DID community has been sort of the same way, where they say, this is DID, this is the exact how it is, and you can't have any other variation, and it's, you have to fit within certain things. And then the community, because it's sort of so, what's the right word? Yeah, people are so judgmental towards them, and there's such a gatekeeping from the medical community as to what DID is and what these things are, yeah, that the community kind of does that to itself and, you know, throws people out of the community that don't fit, or, you know, gets angry and says, you know, certain people aren't. It's just, it was kind of messy. And so we ended up kind of going, all right, this doesn't seem to really fit for us. And I think eventually it will develop into something more accepting and wholesome and not in gatekeeping.
Well, you have the official diagnosis. If you wanted, you could show them the psychiatric evaluation.
Yes, 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 absolutely, absolutely. But even then, it's like the community just is, I don't know. I maybe it just needs some work. It just needs some time. But I feel for them too, because, you know, even when doctors don't believe them, even when medical professionals are saying, you know, oh, I think it's psychosis or it's schizophrenia, you know what I mean? It's like they deal with so much discrimination and judgment that it's kind of reflected in the community. So after that, after leaving that community, we decided, well, where do we fit in? And Tristan hadn't seen the 2017 Times article about UAPs.
Yeah, that was new to me. I was blown away that there was like a UFO and it was released by the military. And I was like, that was one of the weirdest things about reality. I come back and UFOs are acknowledged. And in the 90s, it was just like this topic that I avoided because I was like, you know, I don't know what to believe. And it sounds, you know, hoaxy or something. I don't know. I just kind of skipped over the topic. It just didn't interest me as a scientist, as a practicalist, so I avoided it. So now here was this thing staring me in the face. And then it was like, okay, well, I want to kind of explore this topic. And I got interested. And then I got like super interested because we kind of went down that rabbit hole together. And that led us, you know, that leads you on a whole journey through spirituality, through channeling, through everything. It was a journey.
I might mention parenthetically, the 2017 article in the New York Times was authored by Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal, both of whom have been on New Thinking Aloud.
I know, we're sitting in a chair of greats, so it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
So you got into what you call what is known as the experiencer community.
Yeah, because we were really looking for just a sense of community or a place where people could believe us and just understand our experience. And so much of the experiencer community deals with consciousness and wanting to understand it and exploring it. And so, you know, we eventually wandered into the subreddit, which is our experiencers. And we ended up meeting one of the admins there, and he welcomed us into the experiencer community. And sure enough, suddenly we had a community and we were able to talk with other people who have had anomalous experiences or dealing with consciousness. We even found people in our situation there who were even keeping it quiet from other experiencers because they didn't want, like, they didn't want to seem crazy to other experiencers. So they were like keeping it quiet from other experiencers, but they came to us privately and were like, hey, listen, I think we're in this situation too. And I have this. And of course, like, it's the same kind of thing. So even in the experiencer community, there's fear of being outcast or not being accepted or being taken as crazy. So, but the community is wonderful. It was amazing. Yeah, we can't thank the mod there, Oak, enough. He really brought us in and made us feel welcome. And, it's been our community ever since.
How does that community define what it means to be an experiencer?
Well, I think they've been talking about it. I think that even the experiencer community in general is talking about it. And I think that it's probably they're still trying to work on it, but it's, I don't know if it's anomalous experiences, but I think it's just
I don't know. Well, I mean, you could even say that everybody's an experiencer to some degree.
I know, but like, I don't know what their definition of it is. I think it's just anomalous experiences.
Okay, so that's very open-ended.
Yeah, very open-ended.
And it includes, amongst other things, I suppose, people who feel they've had contact with non-humans.
Yes, yes, non-human intelligences, yes. Yep.
So let's start there for a moment. Have either of you had an experience that would be of that sort?
Yes.
And it's really funny, too, because, like, you know, when we came here, we hadn't really talked about that with you, but we didn't want to, like, seem any more crazier than we already appear, because it's like, oh, my gosh, now we are kind of going into this, the deep end of also, like, non-human intelligences and contacts. But, yes, we've had many experiences at this point.
Many? Okay.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Well, let's share one of them with our viewers.
Okay. Do you want to?
Listen, you go for it.
Okay. So we had an experience where we went to bed and then all of a sudden was woken up and there was a being at the end of the bed. And it was this tall gray or maybe it was so hard because it was like we woke up, we saw it. And the weird thing was is that we were actually sleeping with this cover around our bed. So it's like it's sort of like a tent that kind of goes over your bed. And we did it because we really didn't want this experience of a being maybe being at the end of the bed. Like there was just this weird feeling. And this is also another weird thing is I've always been kind of afraid of grays.
But I don't. I was terrified of ET as a child. So I had... Well, I can go into that later.
But anyway, so the bed cover disappeared and it was our room and there was the being at the end of the bed and it was like pulling on the legs, but there was this, we had this primal instinct of fear. It was just like this moment of total absolute fear and we're like kicking and trying to get away. And then all of a sudden, like reality snapped back and then all of a sudden, like the tent was back up and the being was gone. And we were just in bed in a total state of panic. So it was interesting.
Were you wide awake when this occurred?
Yeah, it's like well, that's the weird thing. It's like it felt like we had just gotten into bed, but yet it was like asleep, but not. I don't know.
A hypnagogic.
Yeah, it could have been a hypnagogic experience, or it could have been like we had just fallen asleep and started dreaming, or I don't know what it was, but it was so vivid and real, and like the being was like really there. It was very strange.
Yeah, and we were like kicking and stuff, and that was the thing is we like when it snapped back, we were kicking, we were moving, we were like, it was like there wasn't like that. You wake up, it was like reality just changed. So it was really bizarre. And I mean, I guess we could have woken up. So yeah, it's one of those, you don't really know, but that's kind of the phenomenon in general.
Well, Tristan, you indicated that you had a fear going back to childhood.
Yes. And this is something that I've had to work on over the last 3 years is I was absolutely terrified of the movie E.T. I couldn't explain it. My parents were just thought it was kind of strange, but it lasted until I was in my 20s. I was just terrified. I couldn't handle seeing him. I couldn't deal with it. And I used to have these really vivid dreams of, I'd be in bed and then this E.T. would be in the house. And if I saw it or if I, I would feel its presence or something. And then, I'd know it was there. And then if I saw it, I'd become like frozen or paralyzed and I couldn't move. And then I had this one weird incident where I kept ending up back in bed. So it was like almost like the dream kept happening over and over again. But I don't know if it was a dream where I was in bed. I'd get up. I'd go out into my grandmother's living room. And then all of a sudden, I'd know the being was there. And then I'd see it out of the corner of my eye. Then I'd be paralyzed. Then I'd immediately be back in bed. And then I'd think I was waking up. And I'd be like, oh, thank God. It was just a dream. And I'd get up out of bed. I'd go to the living room. And then it would happen again and again and again. And it happens. And every time I was like, oh, I'm finally awake. And it just, I kept getting back into bed. That was one. And then when I was even into my teens, when I was in college, I ended up having this experience where I became paralyzed in bed. There was a bright, all the windows filled up with light, and there was a being in the room. I've seen shadow people. And I was a materialist. I was an atheist. I just was like, oh, it's a dream. This isn't real. It's sleep paralysis. And I had all these explanations. But now looking back, it's like my life was filled with high strangeness and I was in total denial about it. So, yeah. And, you know, it took me a while to get over the fear of ET. I'm still not a huge fan of him, but, you know, I've made my peace and I love him.
Okay. And now, Annika, you said you had many encounters.
Another one is that basically, we were asleep. We were sleeping in bed. And then all of a sudden, we were just having a normal dream. Well, actually, it wasn't that normal because my grandmother showed up in that dream and she was telling me to just breathe. She kept saying, it's going to be okay. Just breathe. Just breathe. And I was confused because I was still in the dream mindset. And I'm like, that's not what's going on. Like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And then all of a sudden, there was just like this snap. And then I was just in darkness. And I was alone. Normally I can feel Annika and I have this really weird dream, like, cause we're sharing the dream, we're adding elements from each other's. It's so bizarre, but then I was alone and I hadn't felt that alone since I was maybe before Annika had even entered the body. It was just me alone, isolated. And I woke up and I was terrified. I knew something had happened and I was like, Annika, are you there? Are you okay? Is everything all right? And it turns out she was having a different experience. Okay. So my experience was, yeah, there was like that snap. And then all of a sudden it was like I was in bed or something, but then all of a sudden the cover of communion, just flashed in front of me and it was that face. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, right after that, there was this, I can only describe it. It was like a download, but it was like an electrical shock of tons of information all at once. And it was just like, and then all of a sudden I couldn't handle it. It was so much that I like screamed and then Tristan was gone. He wasn't there. I couldn't feel him. It was so bizarre because it's like, usually I can always feel him to some degree unless he's completely left the body. And then I started to wake up and I woke up to Tristan trying to wake me up. And I kept wanting to go back to sleep. I was like, yeah, it was just those beings. They were, you know, and I was like totally out of it. And I don't know, looking back, it was like, I can understand it in the context of what experiencers go through, you know, wanting to go back to sleep, not thinking there's anything wrong, that like this is like, it's kind of contradictory behavior or something like that. And Tristan was not having any of it. And he was trying to shake me awake. And eventually he got me, like, snapped me out of it and was like, yeah, something weird happened. We have to talk about this. This is bizarre. And, you know, and then we talked about it and we were having two different experiences. And I don't even know how that would work in the brain where he's having an isolated experience on his own and I'm having an isolated experience on our own. And I think if anything, that was like definitely contact with a non-human intelligence. And the precision, the psychic precision of separating us, it was like a laser precision separated us and gave each of us different experiences. I can't account for that. It was bizarre.
It would suggest the possibility that you are being experimented on.
You know, experimented, I don't think that's even the right word. I would say that if anything, it's been assistance in our spiritual growth.
Okay.
Because that has been the overall arching theme, is wakening up to greater and greater spiritual understanding, spiritual truths. And that's been your perspective as well.
Yeah. It's, you know, at early on, you know, like looking back at the ET stuff, it's like a very abduction feeling. And, you know, it's a little hard to even go into it because it's a little, you know, but yeah, I would say also that it was very much important for our spiritual growth and our understanding and connectiveness.
Well, you're speaking about it in the past tense, but I get the impression maybe this is ongoing.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely ongoing because it's shaped our relationship with reality. We now see reality for it's a living being. Everything, you and the universe are one. You're one being. Everything is one. And so reality itself is alive. And I'm not just talking about like you and me or and Tristan and the audience. I'm talking about the very fabric of what you would consider space-time, what you would consider everything. It's all alive because it's you. It's you because you're God. And so like, yeah, it's been a wild journey.
Well, I subscribe to that point of view. And if I recall correctly, Annika, you told me at one time you had been reading The Law of One.
Yes. Yeah, I have. I really got into it. And then I even had some, and this is going to sound weird, but I've even had some contact with Ra. And I got to kind of, I've had some weird experiences with Ra, you know, themselves, because they're a social memory complex. And that was fascinating and also important to spiritual growth. And every now and then I kind of send a message out in the universe like, hey, Ra, love you, you know, because it is like that. It's wonderful.
And there's, don't want to make too much of it, but the channeler, the original channeler of the Law of One material and the Ra contact, Carla Ruckert, was also a colleague of Andrea Puharich.
So and lots Gene of Roddenberry.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there's even stuff in Star Trek that really kind of hints at that. I think that was the thing that shocked me the most was after having all of these experiences, then looking back at Star Trek in a totally different light. Cause I was like, there's no way they didn't know about these things. There's all of these concepts that they explore that I didn't even catch as a child where I'm like, oh, they're talking about this, but they're doing it in sort of an allegorical way or symbolic way. Or maybe they're doing an episode that features it, but they're not saying it implicitly. So yes, it was Star Trek is a whole nother ball game now for me.
Because it did occur to me that your experience is not so different from people who do channeling.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's actually a really interesting point because in the experiencer community, we got to talk with channelers. We got to talk with mediums. And it was fascinating comparing notes because we could have conversations with them, like talk shop and be like, mm-hmm. Oh, you know, like what happens, you know, like sometimes the other person forgets to breathe and they're like, oh man, I hate it when the being I'm channeling doesn't know to use the lungs and all of a sudden I'm suffocating. And it's like, we suffocate each other all the time. Or the fact that one might be getting thirsty and the other one isn't aware of it. And so it was so fascinating to be able to talk about this and see how similar our experiences were. And also to talk, because that's the interesting thing. Like there's things that they don't tell anyone because it's just little tiny weird details about it. And we could talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is very similar. And I think it really hints at like the nature of consciousness.
So these things, channeling, mediumship, are often considered, people who are so far away from the center of society, so much on the fringes, they're completely marginalized until maybe recently people are taking a second look at it.
Yeah, you know, things are changing. Things have been changing for a while, but they seem to be changing rapidly. And that has been really nice because now we feel like we can talk about our experiences and also including the non-human intelligence element. It's been really nice. And, you know, even the DID community is considered on the fringe, but these are all real things that are happening to people. So it's really important to have these discussions and to make the public more aware of what's actually going on in the nature of reality.
Annika seems to be pretty much sold on the philosophy espoused in the Law of One materials. How about you, Tristan?
I think we're on the same boat. We see reality as living, breathing. It is, everything is one. You are God. You know, you're awakening. You're becoming aware of being God and realizing that everything is interconnected and how you treat others, that's you. So when you hurt someone or you hurt an animal or you everything that you're doing to yourself and how you view yourself, whether you love yourself or you hate yourself, that's you as God. Working through understanding who you are, and dealing with it. So that's why I'm not afraid of death. It's like, it's just a stepping stone, a transitional barrier. There's nothing to it. It's because you are God. You are the singularity.
The singularity, that's an interesting way to put it. That the singularity being also a point outside of time and space.
Yes, because, you know, the Big Bang, it was one point. Everything in the universe was this one point. Mm-hmm. And I like to think of it as you never really left the point. You're still the singularity. You're still here. You're still experiencing everything, but you've separated yourself, you know. And that's another thing that I really want people to understand, too, is that our situation is no different than, say, you know, you and another person on the street. We're just inhabiting one body, but you, as God, you're separated from, you know, this, from others that you see, but it's no different than us. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, it's that separation to understand yourself as God.
I had many conversations with a fascinating philosopher, Bernardo Kastrup, who takes the opinion that the universe is fundamentally made of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness is the ground. And he would say that why we seem to be different personalities is because of some sort of a dissociation that occurs, that if we weren't dissociated, we'd realize all the time that we're one with everything. But because we're dissociated, and he says the dissociation is the result of having a body. The body is the membrane that causes us to feel dissociated. In your case, though, you share a body, and you still feel, would you say that the two of you are one?
Yeah, I mean, like, we're all one, but of course, we are also separate, too. And I think, like, quantum mechanics even hints at that in the states of, like, superposition. You can be both at the same time. You can be God and be all and be divine and also be separated at the same time. Because if you're going to be all, you have to be all. Literally, you're everything. Yeah. So you're having all the experiences. And you're experiencing them in localized frames of reference. And you're experiencing them as in higher. And you have to have an infinite number of perspectives on that experience. So yeah, you're everything.
There are people who write about cosmic consciousness where a human can have that experience. I think it's pretty brief. I don't think it can be sustained for too long and still go about your daily responsibilities, but of being aware of everything all at once.
Mm-hmm. We've had those.
You've had that.
Yep, we've had that.
Can you describe it?
It's a really interesting experience. All of a sudden you become aware, and it's something we've also been practicing too, because, you know, we go into those meditative states. So we've learned to, you know, as they say, control your frequency, control your vibration. We're able to do that. And so we've pushed that further out and we've managed to pull in that higher self kind of thing and have that greater awareness. And then you kind of go up in those vibrations, and then eventually you have that moment where you are absolutely one with everything. And it doesn't last forever, because it wouldn't be useful for your spiritual growth if it did last forever, but it is always there. It is always accessible. You are always able to access it. And at that point, you know, Anik and I are one with everything, and we're one with each other. And there's no, our switches become even more fluid, and all of a sudden it just becomes more and more fluid until we become one with all.
Well, that's beautifully put. I don't know how much more we can add to that. And yet, at the same time, you want to make a contribution to science.
And yes.
Science isn't going to get too far with that idea of we're all one, because how do you do science with that?
Right, exactly. But I think
slowly humanity's waking up, and it needs to wake up. People need to become aware that they're God, that everything is one and interconnected, because we're facing challenges here on Earth in our separation in this layer of existence and reality, artificial intelligence, the technological singularity, global warming, potential nuclear war. There's all of these challenges.
Almost a great filter, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, We have to awaken and understand these things so that we can come together as a collective consciousness and make a better Earth.
And that's why we're doing this in service to others, to help others understand these things so that they can see this, so they can know that this is real, so that they can see this, the two consciousness, that the soul's and leaving the body, so that that way they can know and science can start looking at this and maybe investigating it. And eventually they will.
Well, there's a segment of our population who take the attitude, for example, that men should be men and women should be women, and that one of the biggest problems in society today is that men aren't masculine enough and women aren't feminine enough.
The manliest thing I have ever done in my life was giving the body to Annika. I can just say it. Like that to me was being able to give it to her, to transition, to change the body, that to me was masculine. I you can't be God and experience everything if you don't experience everything. And you can't love yourself if you don't love others. So you have to love people who are having very different experiences with you than you. Like, you have to love people who are trans. You have to love people who are gay. You have to love everyone, absolutely everyone, and understand that they are you and just having a different experience, and that experience is important to your spiritual growth because you are God. So the idea that there's these boxes and that this is one way to do things, that's not how the universe works. And eventually that box will fall apart. Or it won't. It's totally optional. It's totally optional to it's totally optional to your spiritual growth. You don't have to do it in one lifetime.
No, the universe can be very patient.
Yes, it's got an infinite amount of time. Take your time. It's like a lazy river.
Do you get into politics?
Yes, because, how can you not? Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to be politically aware. You have to be aware of it, and because it's about you ultimately. It's the same thing. It's all is one. So politics are you. So you have to be politically and socially aware. It's very, very important to be awake, just not on a social level, but also on a spiritual level.
Agreed. Just want to say.
When you say all is one, of course, we're talking about other life forms, non-human, that are here on Earth, worms, mollusks.
Absolutely.
And you're allergic to mollusks.
Yes, I am. I am allergic to mollusks. I'd prefer if they stayed far away.
I'd prefer if they stayed in my mouth. not great.
But how do you experience love for things that you find detestable, despicable?
You have to. I mean, it's a challenge. It's a part of that spiritual growth. You have to love the things, because it's just like you don't like things about yourself. And in order for you to have a happy, healthy life, you have to love those things. You have to love your flaws. You have to say, well, okay, I might be this way, but maybe in the future I'll continue to work and become a better person. And so you have that same hope for society. You go, okay, that wasn't great. Maybe that political stuff isn't wonderful, but I love them. I love everybody on the political spectrum. They are me and we are one. And so you have to love. It's so important.
Compassion, forgiveness, acceptance, and love. Absolutely.
They're fundamental.
What about with the ET that frightened you so much as a child?
We love them too. Yeah. And I love ET, and I love Grays, because I have a fear. I used to have a fear of them. Now I'm doing a lot better. Yeah. You have to love them too, because they love you. I know that's weird, but they do. And in whatever alien, non-human intelligence way, because they're aware of these things. So, not all of them, of course, they're on their own paths, of course, but, and we're not afraid. I mean, like, when we have those experiences where we feel a presence in the room, we're reminded that all is one, and that we're safe, and that, that it's okay. It's really, it can be a challenge when you're afraid, but, Fear not.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, to change the topic again, I understand that you've experienced remote viewing.
We have.
Yeah. And I actually have an interesting story about that, too. So when we were falling down the rabbit hole, so to speak, you know, I was a little overwhelmed at the time because Annika wanted to do remote viewing. She wanted to try psychic stuff. She wanted to do these kinds of things. And I was so unsure if it was safe. I didn't know what we were getting into. I didn't know if the beings were safe. And this was before I had the whole perspective of love and one is all. I saw it as this could open a doorway that we can't shut and I don't know what to do. So there was this moment, it was over like a couple summers ago, where I went out onto our deck and it was on my mind. I was thinking about it. I was ruminating over this, over whether this was a good idea and that if Annika should pursue this. And when I went out onto the deck, and this is bizarre, the trees were filled with owls. This wasn't a dream. This wasn't anything. I had just was cleaning the house. I walked in on the deck and the trees were filled with owls. And the owls were my grandmother's favorite bird. She loved owls. She'd always take me out to see them. They're just hooting and making all of this noise. And I had never seen anything like it. I'd never seen or heard so many owls in my life. And then I just knew that my grandmother was there. Couldn't explain it. I knew she was there. I looked up at the sky and I said, Nana, if this is the right thing to do, you know, and if she should pursue this, if I should allow this, please just give me a sign. And in the exact place that I was looking in the sky, a shooting star went right across. I mean, I didn't have to move my eyeballs. I didn't have to change or look anywhere in the sky. And there was just this little patch of sky and shooting star. And at that moment, I was like, okay, it's fine. I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. And statistically, that's so improbable. The owls, the shooting star, this was not a dream. I was fully awake. I went back inside and vacuumed the house. So yeah, it was because he cleans a lot more than I do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, and after that, we tried remote viewing. We have a great success at it. I loved it. It was amazing. It was eye-opening, third eye-opening, if you will. And it was a very different, and it taught me more about intuition and trusting your intuition, which helped me build a much closer relationship with reality, with myself as reality itself, everything all around me, because I realized I could trust my intuition. I could trust it all the time. I didn't ever have to not trust it. I could just know that that sign, this was a sign, that was a sign, this was a sign. And then all of a sudden, that's when synchronicity started exploding into our life, where at some point we reached where every single second, everything that we looked at was a synchronicity. And then all of a sudden psychic stuff started happening. We knew when people like at our job were like not thinking about us, when they were thinking about us. We knew like when like Tristan's mom was like thinking about us, when family was thinking about us, and we could call them and they were like, oh wow, that's so funny. I was just thinking about you. And we just started having all of these weird psychic experiences, which further fueled our spiritual growth, which further fueled our understanding that all is one. And that this is, you can be aware of more than just yourself.
Speaking of gender for a moment, you consider yourself female.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
As we discussed earlier, you would think of yourself basically as a 16-year-old female.
Yeah, it's hard to be like, I don't know what I don't know, but yeah, I would definitely say that I'm, you know, a lot younger and less experienced than Tristan. So I see myself, I mean, I celebrate my birthday every year and we celebrate on two different days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I celebrate on December 12th and mine is October 30th. And so, yeah, I, you know, there's going to be 16 candles on the cake this year. So, yeah.
December 12th, did you say?
December 12th.
And how did you arrive that date?
That was the day, I left a recording for her on the phone and would basically said, hey, listen, you know, I'm dying. The body is yours. And yeah, that was it. Mm-hmm.
And also I did a little bit of research and I found out that the pregnancy, the expected due date was December 12th, which was just this massive synchronicity that I couldn't ignore.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that. I totally lost track of what year, what day, and everything.
So that's my birthday.
But what I'm getting at is there is a sense in which somebody might really think of you as a hermaphrodite.
People are going to think a lot of things, and that's okay if they view us as a mix of both or two things at once. Or I mean, like, because that's also the nature of reality, I guess, is being multiple things at once. There's no rules. There's no, you can be, even as the universe says, God, you're multiple things at once and you're one thing. So it's the same thing with us.
The reason I bring it up at all, because, it's unimportant to me for other reasons, but I wonder if that sense of the balance of the male and the female is in any way related to opening up the psyche to experiencing the paranormal.
It could be. I think it's opened our eyes to so many different things because we've both experienced being in the body when it was the opposite, perceived to be the opposite gender to other people. So even on a social level, it was eye-opening to see how Tristan was treated as a male.
And it was very eye-opening to see how, the body in Annika is treated as a female. So, yeah, it's a part of the spiritual growth.
And as far as, like, opening up the psyche and the male, yeah, I mean, like, I definitely have my more dudish moments, of course, you know what I mean? And, Tristan has feminine moments. There's really no... humanity and people tend to want to put things in a nice little neat package, a nice little neat box. And I think it's because it helps them feel like they have control over something or that they understand something when they already do. They're just unaware of it and they don't need the box. But the box is also really important to make stepping stones for your spiritual growth. Because eventually you poke your head out of it and you go, oh, there's more to it than just this little box that I've defined myself in.
Yeah, like, people might think reincarnation only happens a certain way. It doesn't. The universe is infinite. You can have it in any kind of weird experience. You can have walk-ins and all sorts of stuff. So there's no one way to do something. Just as there's no one way to experience something. Exactly.
Let's talk about control.
Okay.
For a minute. That's a big topic. And I'm sure there are moments when you want to be in control. Like, for example, I did the interview with you, Tristan, just earlier today.
Yeah.
And it happens to be, for anyone who's interested, today is Easter Sunday, 2024. But in any case, you needed to be in control of the body to do the interview.
Yes, yes.
It was important, and Annika left.
Yep, I did. Which was, it was kind of strange because I went down and I'm like, oh, it's breakfast time. But no, it's noon.
Yeah, you had breakfast. He had breakfast.
Yeah, I had breakfast. I'm like, wow, I feel so chipper and awake. It's like I don't even need coffee because I had the 2 cups of coffee.
There is a sense in which everybody needs a measure of control.
Right, exactly. And, it's a process like between us, we give each other control over the body, knowing that it's going to be okay. It's a trust exercise, as I mentioned. It's.
Well, okay, but hold on. At first, like when we were first switching, it was really scary because we were afraid, what if the person just takes the body? Or what if, they do something with the body that we don't approve of?
Or the fact that I'm a vegetarian and she is,
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
A pescatarian?
You had bacon yesterday.
I did. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, we just even having control over the diet is a huge amount of, and the end result is you have to compromise. You have to be able to go, okay, well, let's make it 50-50 or as fair as possible. You can do it here on these days or you can do it at night, but you can't do it during the day. I need the body. And ultimately, you have to have that love, compassion, and understanding for the other person, the other. Even if it's not inside, it's outside. You have to have that love and compassion and be able to compromise. It's so important.
And it strikes me that in your very unusual life, there is an issue of control with regard to the whole universe because there's so much that we can't control. But what we can do is, you might say, tango. It can be a dance. Mm-hmm.
Or a communion, if you will. It's like the idea is that, so one of the things that I like to do is like when I'm not super when I'm kind of in this, I don't want to say like density, but like when I'm in this mode of thought where I feel very separated and the world feels very, very real, and you're not having like this a greater awareness, I like to call reality casita. And this comes from the movie Encanto, where the characters are living in this house and the house is alive. And none of it's totally normal to all the characters, but in the movie, casita will literally rearrange itself to help the characters, you know, achieve this spiritual growth. And so, like, the characters will need a stair to get somewhere, and then the house will make the stairs. And the house is alive, and everybody regards the house as alive. This is a perfectly normal thing in that universe. And that is actually, like, the universe itself. It makes these weird synchronicities. It leads you. And you kind of have to just have faith that it is you. And so it loves you and it wants the best for you. And you're going to go through really difficult, challenging and difficult things, but it's a part of that spiritual growth. It's there to help you. And you can have that communion, that relationship with yourself as all of reality.
What a wonderful metaphor. I'm not aware of this movie.
It's great. You should watch it. We love it.
It's called Encanto?
Yes, it's called Encanto. It's Disney, so it's only Disney Plus. It's fantastic.
It would suggest that there are a lot of people out there, creative people, who are in their own way thinking along the same lines.
Yep. Exactly. And the same thing is true for a lot of people with God. Like you might say, God is casita. The thing that I find with the whole God thing is because you are God, it's an equal. Reality is an equal to you. We're all equals. There's, and even like humans are like, oh, there's higher and lower. But at the same time, it's like we're all one. So it's like we should treat it as all one. We're all equal. You're equal to all of reality. So that's another important aspect of it.
Would you say you're equal to an ant?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and it might not be the best for that ant's spiritual growth. Well, you know, I have to kind of trust reality if I accidentally step on it.
Yeah, please don't. Mm-hmm. We try to save all the insects and spiders and everything.
Yep. But yeah, even to an ant or to a non-human intelligence or even to a social memory complexes. And you have social memory complexes, you know, and, you know, entire civilizations interacting with individuals on Earth. And to some people, they would go, oh, well, that's like a human interacting with an ant. And yeah, because they understand that all is one and that everyone is equal. So they do interact with individual humans because being bigger or more intelligent doesn't necessarily mean you see this bigger picture and you ignore the little things. It's that you also see all the little things too and see how important they are in everything.
No, you use that term I'm unfamiliar with, social memory complex.
Yeah, so that's what Ra is.
Yeah, Ra is a social memory complex, which is like a civilization. Like imagine if everyone on Earth decided, oh, we're all going to think the same. We're going to have telepathic communication. We're all going to see each other as one. And they all sort of form a society that's structured around it. And then they can sort of like interact. It's like this collective consciousness that planetary sphere has. And, you know, and then they evolve and go on their spiritual growth as a collective consciousness.
Yeah. And actually, it's a really interesting point, too, because, you know, if you have, say, DID or you're dealing with multiple souls, you can kind of consider yourself as sort of like a little social memory complex because you're multiple souls that are united by one thing. So like maybe we're united by Earth, maybe we're united by a country, maybe we're united by a body and we're multiple souls in a body. And so you have to interact and have this service to others or maybe service to self, if you so choose, relationship with each other. And, you know, you can consider yourself one. So you do hear stories of people who may be multiple souls, but they say they integrate and they become one. So that's possible, too. And that could be maybe an option for people who are like us and they want to form sort of that really tight connectedness and see themselves not as two people, but see themselves as one being.
That doesn't seem to be anything that you desire.
No, we enjoy this experience.
Yeah, we're big fans of the experience we're having now. That might change in the future, but I
don't think it's possible in this.
Yeah, it might not be.
Because we love each other. Yeah, we love we love our experience. We love what we're going through now. We love this.
And maybe in another lifetime, we'll, you know, who knows? And that's the other thing. You got to divorce yourself from expectation.
Yeah, just go with the flow and see where it takes you.
Well, what a wonderful experience it has been for me to get to know you better.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been an honor.
I feel honored as well. And I'm very delighted to welcome you into my home and into my studio and to share your wisdom, which I think it is really hard-earned wisdom, with our viewing audience, with the New Thinking Aloud audience, and hopefully with the larger scientific community as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And if I can just say one thing to the viewers, and that is just, love is everything. It's the most important thing in this universe, to love yourself and to love others and to have compassion for everything.
And forgiveness.
Absolutely.
I totally endorse that sentiment. I do. So thank you each for being with me.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much, Jeffrey.
And for those of you listening or watching, thank you for being with us, because you are the reason that we are here. Book 2 in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ celebrating his 90th birthday. New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.